Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, Homemade Pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Creative Crafts, Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Dankies, the Bean Scene Cafe, and Prairie Fire Glass, all housed in the same buildings in downtown Monticello.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are glad to have you listening. We're also pleased to have back on this program the man that we like to call our unofficial chef in residence, or maybe it is official. It's the only one that we got. His name is Doyle Moore, and for a long time now, he's been stopping by on a regular basis. We do the programs on the first Wednesday in 10 o'clock hour, and we talk about cooking. And we pick some dish to focus on, and then we say to people, well, tell us about this. Have you made this? Do you have a particular way of making this that's different from other people? Is there something about it, some particular spin or twist that you do on this thing? And we collect recipes. And on the way, we also end up collecting a lot of stories because food is associated with family. And it has various kinds of traditions associated with it, and it's very important for people to carry on and maintain continuity in those traditions. And food is a very big part of it. Now, we are just 3 weeks away, 3 weeks from tomorrow, from Thanksgiving. Oh. And for a lot of people, that means a time to get together with friends and family and have a nice dinner. And also, traditionally, I guess, for a lot of people, the centerpiece there, the main attraction would be turkey. Not everybody does. People maybe have different things. Maybe there are people who don't have meat. But what we're looking for this morning is some conversation about what it is, whatever the main thing is, what it is that needs to go with that. As I said before, what are the supporting cast? If that's the star, if it's a turkey, if it's a ham, if it's a goose, if it's a big lump of tofu, whatever it is, what goes with that? What are the important things to go around? What are the side dishes? If you're going to have a big, festive, nice time and you're going to put some effort into being in the kitchen, what are the side dishes that go with this? And this is the kind of thing that opens up a lot of territory. Could be just about anything. Could be appetizers, could be soup, could be a vegetable dish, could be some kind of starch, could be anything. If you have a good recipe, and maybe this is indeed one of those things that in your house – It has to be there on the table. It wouldn't be Thanksgiving without that thing. Maybe you can call in and share the recipe with us. Or if you just want to call and say hi, that's fine. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us. And that is 800-222-9455. 333-9455, Champaign-Urbana, 800-222-9455. That's the toll-free line. Welcome back.
Yes, as a matter of fact, thank you.
Glad to have you here. Is there something that you always make?
No, not anymore.
There would have been at one time something?
There would have been green beans cooked for about 4 or 5 hours, six mm-hmm. hours, with bacon. Mm-hmm. Would be for sure, and it would be delightful if you could. We did. Green beans in the 30s was very peculiar. They didn't appear on the market fresh all the time. And so canned ones were the standby. And the funny thing to me is you take canned green beans and you cook them long enough and they taste like fresh green beans that have been cooked for a long time.
Well, they certainly don't need any more cooking.
No.
Really, once you open that can.
Apparently, except if you do, then they do take on that character of having cooked a long time, and that's the character that you want to eat. That's what a lot of people just simply will not spend that much time cooking them, and I find it very interesting. Of course, I don't either now. You 3 minutes in boiling water and 10 minutes in the wok, and the green beans are done, and mm-hmm. they're delicious. But it isn't that same taste. That would be one thing that would have been used over and over and over. And then, of course, mashed potatoes. You got to have mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
I would like roast ones that you cut. Boil and then roast, and recently I'd learned to sprinkle rubbed sage on top of the sage on roasted potatoes is absolutely wonderful. It complements anything else that goes on.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a new dish, but But remembering the old. Now, actually, it isn't so much the side dishes; it's the accompaniments to the side dishes that were even more specific in my family, since mother was Pennsylvania Dutch, and she didn't insist on having the seven sweets and seven sours, but somehow we had them without making a fuss about them. I mean, I just recall all of the things that would have been, you know, cottage cheese, apple butter, bread and butter pickles, chow chow that she would have made, and a relish she would have made, and watermelon pickles that she would have made. And so all of those little condiments that go around, those would only appear at holiday time or very special times. Mm-hmm. And I kept wondering why, you know, how come we're eating these funny sweet pickles and things like that? But there was never an explanation. And I had to learn later about the seven sweets and seven sours of the Pennsylvania Dutch table and love it. And that is what really adds to another dimension to the food. So it could be, sure, it could be just mashed potatoes and green beans cooked for a long time, probably scalloped corn. And only much, much, much later did I ever learn about oysters in scalloped corn or in dressing. That was oysters were only at Christmas Eve for some funny reason. Well, not a funny reason. They're a traditional European seafood on the, because it's a meatless night, Christmas Eve, and so seafood would be served, and the Italians have a seven fish kind of a dish, and then on down to oysters, and we would end up having oysters. And it was December, and it was cold, and so they wouldn't have been, you know, they'd have been good. That's about the only time we ever had oysters. Daddy insisted on oyster soup.
Well, we got somebody here to talk with.
Okay, good.
In Aurora.
Sure.
Line number four, toll-free line, right here. Hello.
Well, what a pleasant addition to this day.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And I needed it.
All right.
Well, my grandson is in culinary school, and he went down to the University of Nevada.
Yes.
In, of all places, Las Vegas.
Yes.
So I went down for 3 days, and of course, the bad part of that situation, we kind of stayed away from, but enjoyed a lot of the other things that were there. And the last day we were there, I noted a sign that said home cooking Southern.
Uh-huh.
So we went in, and it was just almost too much like, I mean, it didn't have any decor, and it was just so plain. And so we ordered, and they asked us if we wanted a gravy meal. And I thought,
oh, yes.
You know about that, huh?
Yeah.
Well, everything has dark brown gravy on it.
Yes.
Well, I didn't order that. My grandson did. I ordered meatloaf because I just thought, gee, I wonder what they do with meatloaf.
They make it wonderful.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't?
No, it was terrible.
Oh, dear.
I ordered sweet potatoes, and they were absolutely delicious. And I am going to make them for Thanksgiving. They kind of saved the whole meal.
Yes. What did you have with the sweet? How were the sweet potatoes done? Were they mashed or were they chunked?
They were in small chunks.
Chunks, yes.
They looked. The color was just beautiful. They just like radiated like
yes.
jewels.
Yes. Yes. Did it have a sauce or a topping?
It seemed to have some kind of juice or something on it. And my grandson, of course, he said what he thought it was. I think he said cinnamon. And his mother said what she thought the taste was. And they kind of haggled about it. Because now he's in culinary school. He argues with
yes.
his mother. And I could never determine it, so I thought, well, this is going to take a session down at the library going through Southern cookbooks, unless you could tell me.
Either molasses or maple syrup.
No, it wasn't
Not?
Either of those.
Not?
It was cinnamon or something. I'm trying to think of the other spice they said it might be.
Not cardamom.
No,
that's too rare in Southern cooking.
Nutmeg?
Nutmeg or mace. It could have been mace.
You know, I'm going to do the mace and the nutmeg.
Yes. Yes, I would vote for mace and nutmeg.
Now, could you tell me if I make, like, 2 cups of sweet potatoes, you know, just to give you some
yes.
bases, how much of any of the cinnamon, mace, or nutmeg would I put in that? Like, about how much?
For safety's sake and on the bottom line, 1/2 teaspoon of each. But
okay.
I would push that up to 1 teaspoon because I do it pretty heavy. But I wouldn't go any farther. If you're going to make that much, a couple of cups, 1/2 teaspoon would be a plenty.
Okay. I was just so disappointed. And, you know, they had a wall of all the important figures that had been in that restaurant.
Yes.
And I wonder why I was so disappointed.
Well,
do you think your home cooking is... I shouldn't have interrupted. Go ahead.
I think because I know that you come from a culture that has a lot of flavor in the cooking. It's elaborate flavors and a mixture of a lot of flavors and the use of a lot of herbs. And Southern cooking is blander, quieter, and just a lot of it, and pretty straightforward, and not very much happening to it. So it might have been too bland for you.
You know, that's exactly what it was. That's exactly what it was.
Well, that's just part of the tradition of cooking. I know that I've often spoken about my mother's kitchen. She only had five boxes of spices, and they were used only for making spice cake and pickles. I had to teach my mother what oregano was, you know, in the late 40s or early 50s, and she never knew what that was. And the idea of herbs, you never even mentioned the word. And so it was salt and pepper, baby, that's it, salt and pepper. And sage in dressing. And pickles made with pickling spices and dill seed wasn't even heard of then. And so it's just another way of cooking. It's pretty straightforward, and it dealt with the fact that a lot of those things don't grow in that part of the country, and you wouldn't have.
Oh, that's right.
You wouldn't have a lot of.
You're very correct. Of course, you would be. Could I just comment on 2 more things?
Yes.
I wanted to tell about my mother's stuffing. And, of course, on the East Coast, they call it stuffing.
Yes, it is. You're absolutely right. And in the South, it's called dressing.
Oh, is it?
Yes, dressing.
My mother always took the onions and sautéed them with celery.
Yes.
And then put the breadcrumbs in, the bread cubes in.
Yes.
And she sautéed that till it was kind of maple brown.
Yes.
And then she put it in the turkey. And it really gave it a very good flavor, very different than just taking, you know, bread and moistening it and having a kind of a solid.
Well, you would indeed had the saute juices that were running around the pan, and then they would caramelize on the bread, and they would give it, they'd make it richer. Yes, indeed.
It was very, very good. And talking about mashed potatoes, you see a lot of recipes, and I've tried it, adding sour cream and chives, and I think that gives mashed potatoes a very nice taste.
Hey, add some roast garlic someday, and then you'll really like it.
Oh, really?
A roasted garlic, not fresh, but roasted.
Where
you take the whole head of garlic and slice off the top of it and
yeah.
cover it in aluminum foil and stick it in the oven and roast it for, 45 minutes to an hour at, 350 would be plenty. And then you're able to just literally squeeze the roasted garlic out of the bulb. So you don't have to try to peel each one. You just squeeze it out. It just scoops right out, and put that in your mashed potatoes.
You'll never
eat them in another way.
Well, thank you. I'll
yes.
listen to the show and be thrilled that you're here.
Okay, right. Thank
well,
you. Bye-bye.
You this is our monthly program on cooking. We do it the first Wednesday of the month, the 10 o'clock hour, have for a long time now, with a man we like to call our official chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. And we talk about, sometimes we picked a particular dish. We've talked about cooking from different regions of the United States. We've talked about different traditions from other countries, just to give us something to concentrate on, although there are no rules. Once we start, who knows where it is we're going to end up. And we exchange stories and cooking tips and recipes. And this time around, he said, well, since it is close to Thanksgiving, and maybe people are thinking about getting together with friends and family and having a big dinner, putting aside the whatever the main thing is, maybe that would be for you a turkey. That for a lot of people, that's the traditional thing to have. He's saying, well, what he'd like to know is what else is going to be on that table. What are there essential side dishes, or perhaps something that you've come across that you think is particularly good and that you would like to tell us about, and you would share the recipe. 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana folks. We do also have a toll free line. That one's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. And we have somebody else to talk with here. This is Champaign and line one. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a recipe that I got off of this show when Jeannie Cheeseman was the producer, and it's the sweet potato cranberry casserole, which came out in your little Focus 580 cookbook.
Oh, yes.
1986.
Yes, that was Jeannie Cheeseman time.
Right, and I do this not every year, but I really like it because it's a little bit tart, and yams are already sweet, and
uh-huh.
I just think it's gaggingly sweet when you put marshmallows on them.
It is.
And I don't like that, but I love this recipe, although I take all recipes with a grain of salt, and it's not a cake, so you don't need to worry about the proportions. But she called for four large sweet potatoes and a half a cup of brown sugar, optional 2 tablespoons of butter, which I don't use, a half a cup of orange juice with pulp, 1 cup fresh cranberries. Now, I use a half a cup of brown sugar and a half a cup of cinnamon sugar, but I use the whole package of cranberries,
mm-hmm.
Is 2 to 3 cups, and I usually use a cup of orange juice. And four large yams, that's a lot. And it fills, a casserole, I think it's about 3 or 4 quarts, actually. And then there's a nut topping. I've tried it without the nut topping, and it just isn't as good. That's got 1/4 cup of chopped toasted nuts, 1/2 cup of oats, 3 tablespoons brown sugar, and 2 tablespoons melted butter, and I add 1/2 teaspoon cinnamon. And you boil the yams first until they're tender, drain and cool so you can handle them, and then you cut them into 1/4-inch slices.
Oh, into slices, yes.
Yeah, and then you arrange the yams in a... She's got a 2-quart casserole, but I'm sure I know mine is bigger than that. It's about 3 or 4. And you use 1/2 of the other stuff on top of that, and then you put in the other 1/2 of the sweet potatoes and the other 1/2 of all the other stuff. And except you pour the orange juice on last.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're supposed to cover it, which is unusual, and bake at 350 to 375 degrees for 45 minutes. Then you uncover it and put on the topping and bake for 10 minutes more. And it keeps very well to use as leftovers, too.
Let me make a 2005 change to your recipe.
Uh-huh.
get a navel orange and grate the skin so you have the zest.
Oh.
And add some zest to it, and then cut down on the sugar, and change the cranberries to dried cranberries.
Oh.
because
they have sugar added.
They have sugar added. That's why I say cut down on the sugar.
Yeah.
Cut down on your amount of sugar. Keep the brown sugar, but use the other sugar, get rid of it, and then put the cranberry the cranberries, because they also have orange in it too. But increase that orange taste, and you'll be delighted with the zest.
Yeah, I think I like the fresh cranberries better though, because they have more tang than the.
Well, they are tangier. They are tangier. But I'm a dried cranberry freak this month.
Yeah.
I've been cooking with them all month.
Well, I'll add the grated orange rind.
Do that. That will make a real good spark, and you'll enjoy that.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Again, other comments, questions, stories, recipes, welcome here. That's what we like to do on the show, hear from people who are listening. If you have a recipe you want to share, the idea here is that we want to talk about side dishes. Thanksgiving is, I said I couldn't believe it myself, it's three weeks from tomorrow.
Yes.
For a lot of people, that means getting together for a nice dinner with family and friends and celebrating and thinking all of the things that you indeed have to be thankful for. And so we want to know, well, what's going to be on that table? Whatever the main thing is, what are the side dishes that really and to really dress it up, and maybe indeed those are things that you wouldn't ordinary during the week. Maybe even the weekends, you're not going to go to that much trouble. But this is something where this is special. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And by the way, last time Doyle was on here, we did have a number of requests for recipes, and I think we decided that the easiest, most direct way that we could get recipes to people who wanted them would be to ask you to send us a self-addressed stamped envelope, and we'll just put them in the mail. That's the easiest, far easier than getting them on the website. And not everybody has internet access. So we will, I'm sure, have some recipes. We'll have them written up. And if you just send us a self-addressed stamped envelope in the mail, we will then send them out to you.
And what's the address?
I have no idea. Let me look that up while we talk with another caller in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
This is maybe not a really scholarly thing, but if you take corn muffin mix like Jiffy that you buy
yes.
in the box,
yes.
add a tablespoon of brown sugar.
Yes.
And it makes it a whole different muffin.
Brown sugar in the corn muffin mix.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, a sweet cornbread is a very deep Southern tradition. The farther you get north, the less sugar it often appears into it. But I have never thought of brown sugar in there.
Well, this came from a friend of mine, and I said, "What did you do to that muffin mix that made it like that?" And she said, "Oh, I just added some brown sugar."
Now, just for fun, I would throw in some walnuts.
Well, I suppose you could.
Especially for Thanksgiving. Wouldn't that be good? Some walnuts in
yeah.
with the brown sugar, because they'd be crunchy. I can't think of anything else I'd want in there. I wouldn't want corn.
No.
That's another kind of a dish. It's almost
yeah.
like a souffle. But brown sugar in the muffin mix, that's a good thing to think about.
Yeah, well, it certainly made I wouldn't have thought it was the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And I had never thought of nuts, because mostly when I'm cooking, I have people who are violently allergic to any nuts. So.
Well, that's too bad. I'm sorry about that.
Well,
because it's a delight.
I could try it for myself. I'm not allergic.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. You're mixing it up, and so put some of the muffins in, and then when you've got two muffins worth of dough left, throw in the nuts.
I couldn't believe what this brown sugar did.
Well, it is, and probably it was dark brown sugar. Because that's got more of a molasses taste.
Well, what I used was the light brown.
The light brown sugar?
Yeah.
Well, either one of them will work. But I like the dark very much.
I'll have to try dark and see what difference that makes.
That's good. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. That's my contribution for the day.
Well, that's a good contribution, and thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. See, I am also of the tribe that puts I put sugar in my cornbread when I make it. I do like
it
to be a little bit sweet.
Uh-huh.
And I have thought from time to time, I've just sort of wondered, well, what would you get if you used brown sugar instead of just the regular white granular sugar?
Well, you would get raves from our last caller
maybe
is what you would get.
Maybe that would be good. I don't know. I guess sometime I could just take a chance and use brown sugar and see what would happen? I guess I could sort of imagine what it would be like.
And I would think I think you'd have to be careful when you're because that's going to be a very decided sweet taste.
Yes.
It's not
yes.
going to be casual sweet yeah. or oh a little hint. No. Mm. And so be careful and have it with. Have it with ham apples, fried apples and ham. That would be a good bread with that.
Mm, okay.
Because then they're all kind of sweet.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to someone here on cell phone. This is line number two. Hello.
Yes. Hello.
Yes.
I'm hoping you can hear me all right.
Sure.
Yes.
I just have to share this with you. I grew up out in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And traditionally, with our turkey and Christmas dinner, we had a cranberry sorbet.
Oh!
It was served traditionally with the main meal.
Yes.
It was served in little sherbet dishes.
Yes.
And it was a tradition that the day before, someone had to churn the...
Okay, yes.
And you're asking me for the recipe. Of course, I'm in the car and I don't have it. But it was a bag or 2 pounds of raw cranberries that were cooked and then run through a food mill.
And then, okay, and in a mill,
and
yes.
And then you make it in an ice cream maker.
Yes.
And then let it sit in the freezer overnight in an ice cube tray so it's flat. And then it was scooped up like ice cream.
Oh, yes.
Into a sherbet glass and served with the main meal.
It's a little palate cleanser.
Well, I think now this recipe is at least 100 years old.
My word.
From my great aunt. So it was in her family. It was always served with both meals. Only at Thanksgiving only at Christmas.
Yes. Well, that is pretty special, isn't it?
It's just cranberries and sugar, and then you put it in an ice cream maker, and that's
good.
It.
Well, get out your what's the maker now? The Danvier. Get out the Danvier, and you'll have it in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
and make that this year. Do that.
I think it's a European. I think it's a palate cleanser. I think that
well,
was
that's
the tradition,
that's how it's used. Yeah.
Served with the meal.
And yes.
So I've never heard of any other family doing this.
Well, you see, cranberries are American.
Yeah.
And so you aren't going to get that in European inspired recipes. So it really is something from that part of the country,
yeah.
and local. That's wonderful.
I just had to share.
Yes,
with
cranberry
you. I'm
sorbet. I'm drooling over that one because I like that.
The
Thank
color
you.
Is beautiful. Beautiful color.
That's good.
When it's frozen. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Well,
thank you
All
for
right.
the call.
Cranberry sorbet.
Let's go on here. We have another cell phone caller here. This is someone on our line 4. Hello.
You there?
Yes.
I got you loud and clear. I'm halfway between Chicago and Indianapolis on I-65.
Wow.
I've got a green bean recipe for you.
Yes.
And I want to give you a little bit of background. My mother was raised in Centralia, Illinois. She
yes.
was born probably around 1920, and so a lot of this has kind of southern/farm roots.
Right.
So you start with about 2.5 pounds of fresh green bean. You'll trim the ends, of course, rinse them, trim the ends, but leave them long.
Leave them long, yes.
Yeah. Then you put it in a pressure cooker, which, by the way, I think are making a resurgence.
They are indeed.
So they go in a pressure cooker. Add to that onion about the size of maybe a golf ball. It doesn't have to be, just to give you a rough idea how much onion. Not
uh-huh.
a whole onion, that's
uh-huh.
more than you need. I put in about 3 cloves of garlic, peeled and split. And then I put in about 1/3 of a pound of raw bacon.
Bacon, yes.
Now, you can add, instead of bacon, and I'm not selling Lipitor today or anything, but instead of bacon, you could put in a ham shank.
Oh, yes, a smoked ham shank.
Right, you
yes.
know, left over from a cooked ham. But I really prefer the bacon and the bacon fat. But you can put the bacon in raw, of course.
Yes.
Then the only change I've made in her recipe was that instead of just adding a little water to cook it, I'll put about 2 ounces of white wine and 2 ounces of water.
Oh.
into the pressure cooker and cook it for 2 minutes.
2 minutes in the pressure cooker?
3 minutes, they come out a little too soft. 2 minutes in the pressure cooker, they'll have some body, but yet they're very well cooked. And, of course, the bacon is very well cooked. It won't look like crispy bacon, but it's all cooked. Of course, the garlic and the onion will be almost disintegrated. Salt and pepper would also go in there before you would pressure cook it.
Yes.
But it's a spectacular dish. Drain it and get out of the way.
That's interesting because you know earlier I was talking about cooking green beans for 4 to 5 hours, but not in a pressure cooker.
2 minutes in a pressure cooker. I used to do three, and then I was convinced that I was cooking them too soft, so I backed it off to two. Works like a charm.
That's great. Well, thank you.
My pleasure.
Gives me a new. I have a new pressure cooker.
Oh, okay.
My pleasure.
So I have something to try on that. That's good.
All right.
2 minutes in the pressure cooker, and the green beans are done. Good. Well,
great.
Thank you.
Well, thanks very much.
All right, guys. Bye-bye.
Take care. Well, I guess that shows you the virtue of the pressure cooker. That is, the cooking times are seriously shortened.
I know to use dry beans and dry peas and things like that in the pressure cooker, that it cuts it down. But I never thought of putting fresh green. But you see, 2 minutes. That's instant gratification.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Some people might not be able to handle all that bacon.
Yeah, I agree, but
it's a pork fat thing.
I'd give it a try.
Okay.
I'd give it a try.
We certainly have time to talk with some other folks here. A good 20 minutes left in this part of Focus. We're talking about Thanksgiving side dishes. If there's something that you really like to have on your table to go with the main entree, whatever that is, you have a good recipe, you can give us a call. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Is there something
I want to throw in, since there's no one on the phone right now? I got a moment or two. Wild rice, walnut, and cranberry dressing. Not dressing, but I mean, yeah.
Like
it's a grain. A grain.
A salad.
You have as a grain.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really easy to make and extraordinarily a delicious bunch of flavors. In essence, it's an onion that you will sauté with some butter and cook it for about 8 minutes until it's golden brown. You can add garlic to that if you like garlic and cook that for another minute. So you've got the sautéed garlic and onion together, and then add 3 cups of water and stir in 12 ounces of wild rice blend or wild rice. Now, if you soak wild rice the night before, it'll cook easier and faster, and then it won't be quite so hard to do. But then cook that for about 30 minutes. It takes a long time, 30 to 45 minutes to cook wild rice. And as soon as that's done, transfer it to a bowl and stir in walnuts and the dried cranberries and parsley. And you don't need anything else.
That sort of reminds me. There's one that
very fast, very quick, kind of like a pilaf.
There is a wild rice, a nutted wild rice that we like.
Oh, nutted wild rice is my favorite. Yeah, that's out of the.
That's a silver palate. That recipe.
Oh, I know by heart, by heart. I do indeed. That is a recipe. Yes.
That's one of Mrs. Inge's favorites.
The nutted wild rice is absolutely wonderful. It's pecans and. Pecans and wild rice and orange juice and olive oil.
Yeah, and the zest from the orange.
And zest from the orange and parsley.
We put in raisins.
And golden raisins.
Golden
raisins, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, it's very good. And also,
make it the day before.
And the flavors will get very excited about each other.
I get very excited about thinking about that.
It's a nice dish, and it's that kind of thing that you'd serve at room temperature. You don't.
Oh, yes.
It doesn't,
right, no.
You don't want it to be cold, but it also doesn't have to be hot, and probably it's better.
It's better the day after, and then and take it out of the ice box so about 2 hours before you're going to serve it.
Yeah.
And it's perfect. Oh, yes, nutted wild rice. Well,
very nice.
See, that's very much what this is.
Yeah. And I'm sure that there are different things that you could put different dried, as you say, you could put different dried fruits in it if you wanted. You could put dried cranberries in that.
Yes, you could.
It might be a little on the tart side, but
No, not the dried cranberries, because they're sweet.
Dried cherries, you could probably do that.
Dried cherries would be really good with that, yes. Uh-huh. Maybe we'll have to work that nutted wild rice salad over. Oh, I have three recipes of that. I mean, three copies of that recipe, one in every house I'm in.
It's just so you don't have one done in a safe deposit box out of the bank. Just in
you're
case,
right. You're right.
You don't want it to get lost.
That's true.
All right. Let's talk to somebody in Philo here. Line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a recipe for what we call cranberry ice, and it's very similar to the cranberry sorbet.
Oh, yes.
That my mother and I used to make and serve with turkey at Thanksgiving.
At Thanksgiving. Is that right? Now, are you also an Easterner by chance?
Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Well, the other caller was Pennsylvania, yes.
This calls for a pound of cranberries.
1 pound of cranberries.
And a cup and a half of sugar and 3 cups of water. And you cook those and strain. Then add a juice of an orange and the rind of an orange, grated.
Yes.
Grated rind, and freeze that. And then get it out frozen, beat up the frozen mixture.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Scrape it with a fork. Yeah.
Light and creamy.
Yeah.
And refreeze. And then we would serve that in sherbet dishes.
In little sherbet dishes.
With our turkey dinner.
Sounds like you must have been neighbors to that caller, because that's exactly the way it's done and the purpose of doing it. I think that people should make an effort to cook in that manner. It seems very hard, and it seems crazy, especially if you have an ice maker in your refrigerator. You don't think about putting these into the ice cube tray. But what you do is you put it in for 2 or 3 hours, and then you take it out and you kind of slush it up with a fork and put it back in and let it freeze some more and slush it up some more. And then there are some people who will put that in a Cuisinart just before they do the final serving, and it's very nice and fluffy. But that is that you don't have to have an ice cream maker. But it takes time, it takes concentration, but it's not a real worry. And ooh, is it special? That's good. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Urbana, and this is someone else, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
At our Thanksgiving table, we always have to have bourbon corn pudding.
Ooh.
Which is, I think, the best corn pudding I've ever tasted.
Give me that recipe. Hurry up. Wow.
Three large eggs.
Three eggs.
1 1/8 cup of evaporated milk.
Evap milk.
3 cups of cream-style corn.
3 cups of cream style, yes.
3 cups of corn kernels. I use the frozen,
and three
but you have
cups
to be
of kernels,
sure and thaw
yes.
them first. 3 tablespoons of melted butter.
3 big teas of butter.
3 tablespoons of brown sugar.
And 3 tablespoons of brown sugar.
3 tablespoons of corn starch mixed with 3 tablespoons of water.
3 starch plus 3 water.
3/4 of a teaspoon of nutmeg.
3/4 of a little tea of nutmeg.
4 1/2 tablespoons of bourbon.
I got lost. How much again?
4 1/2 tablespoons.
That's 1/4 cup.
Yeah. 3/8 of a teaspoon of salt, and then as much salt and pepper as you want.
And S and P, yes.
And then it's very simple. You just beat the eggs in the milk.
In the milk.
And then add all the rest of the ingredients. And, you know, stir
cream
it up.
Corn and kernel corn and melted butter and sugar and starch.
Yep. And
And the bourbon.
And then just put it in a 2-quart dish and bake at 350 for, the recipe says 45 minutes, but I find it takes closer to an hour until it's brown and set in the middle.
Wow.
Really good.
Oh, I'm not even going to argue about that. That sounds great. A bourbon cream. Oh, wow. Thank you.
And I've got one other that's sort of, we've just started making this recently, and actually we usually make it at Christmas time when we have prime rib and Yorkshire pudding.
Oh, yes.
But this is an artichoke and portobello bake.
Oh, my.
You take a 14-ounce can of quartered artichokes. 2 tablespoons of olive oil.
2 big teas of oil.
2 teaspoons of minced garlic.
Garlic.
A half a cup of chopped shallots.
Of shallots, yes.
8 ounces of sliced baby portobello mushrooms. Some people call them cremini.
Creminis, yes.
Yeah.
8 ounces of sliced.
Yeah, sliced. 1 teaspoon of Italian seasoning.
1 teaspoon, yeah.
Salt and pepper to taste. 1 tablespoon of fresh lemon juice.
And 1 tablespoon of lemon.
And 1/4 cup of Italian seasoned breadcrumbs.
And 1/4 cup, 1/4 of a C of breadcrumbs.
And then you just put the artichokes into a 2-quart baking dish. Spray it first with some kind of, you know, spray.
Yes.
But just spoon the artichokes into the dish. And then in a skillet, you heat the oil. Add the garlic and shallots. And cook for 2 to 3 minutes. Add the mushrooms. Italian seasoning, salt and pepper, lemon juice, and breadcrumbs.
And the breadcrumbs, the rest of it, yes.
Yeah, and just sort of cook that for about 3 minutes and spoon that over the artichokes and sort of, you know, mix them up a little bit. And then bake 25 to 30 minutes.
Bake it at what temperature?
Oh, at 350.
At 350, yes. Bake it for 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds good. Artichokes and then the breadcrumbs and the mushrooms.
Yeah, it's just a... It's a nice side dish, you know.
Well,
you don't need a lot of it. Just
that's what we're looking for today.
Everybody.
That's great. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you.
Artichokes and mushrooms.
We have time for maybe one or two if there's somebody out there who was thinking about calling and hadn't quite yet done it. The man is here, the man we like to call our official chef in residence, Doyle Moore is his name, and he's here once a month, generally on first Wednesday, and we talk about cooking, and we always have a good time exchanging recipes and stories.
Well, as long as we've got a moment, I got another recipe that I wanted to throw in here today with Brussels sprouts and bacon and apple. And you heat the oven at 425, which is very hot. Arrange the bacon in a single layer on a baking sheet and bake it for 10 minutes. That gets rid of more grease than if you're trying to fry it and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then take Brussels sprouts that you have cut the ends trimmed and cut them in half and toss them in on a layer on top of that tray and sprinkle with salt and pepper and then roast them. Don't saute them, but roast them in the oven for about 15 minutes and toss in the apples. The apples are sliced and roast it for another 15 minutes. So you do it. It's in 3 steps, the bacon and then the Brussels sprouts on top of the bacon and roast them. And then the apples on top of that and roast that for 15 minutes. And then 2 teaspoons of red wine vinegar. You just kind of toss over that and then mix the whole thing up. So there's not a lot of herbs and spices. There's only the red wine vinegar to go with it. Well, what have you got? You've got greens and bacon. It's like wilted lettuce, isn't it?
Hmm. I might be willing to try that. Now, myself, I have negative concerns about the Brussels sprout.
Oh, well, they are, except when the Brussels sprouts are done and it ends up being really, really scrumptious looking. Look at that picture.
Well,
it looks good, doesn't it?
It does.
And you see,
pretty good.
Then what you don't like about the funny taste of Brussels sprouts is going to be modified by the bacon and the apple. It would modify it.
That could be because I think that my problem, and I think people always tell me that, well, it's the issue of the Brussels sprouts, and if you get them right, they're okay. My problem with Brussels sprouts is my experience has been they can be exceptionally bitter.
Bitter,
and I just don't. It's not a taste I particularly enjoy.
That may come from boiling them. It could be because they're sitting in there and boiling in the liquids, and then so since these are sort of dry roasted in the oven, that would also change it, and that heat directly to I'm guessing I'm not making this up. It's just coming to me. My thought is a different cooking method would give you a different taste.
Uh-huh.
Because it would have less or more grease or less or more water, and it wouldn't leach out those. I'll bet you'd like this.
Maybe so. And
also, since they're cut,
if
they're cut, then you're going to get into all of it. You may also be having Brussels sprouts that are not really raw in the middle, but not as cooked as on the outside.
Huh.
So you get mush on the outside and hard on the inside. Cut these in half, and you've got them solved.
Now, I guess one of the things that to me that sounds like I might be okay with that is that also with the apples in there, you get a little bit of sweetness to offset.
Yes.
So you have the great mouthfeel of fat.
Right.
And that thing that comes from the bacon and a little bit of sweetness from the apple. And then if you throw the Brussels sprouts away, you
might have a
you
good
might
dish,
have a dish
huh?
right
well,
there.
You're right. It could be. Maybe that's the answer.
No, actually, it sounds pretty good.
It does.
I'd be willing to
give it a try.
All right. Again, somebody wants to call us here real quick. We can get in another caller, I'm sure. Maybe two, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Sweet potatoes. Now, this is the kind of thing that I'm interested. We had some conversation about sweet potatoes, and that's one of the things that probably some people really like and want to have, but maybe would want to be moving away from those treatments where people would say sweet potatoes are sweet enough. You don't need to add a lot more. And I think what happens is we end up with stuff that's candy sweet.
Yeah.
You might want to have, you know, a little bit, like, as you say, a little bit of maple syrup is nice.
Uh-huh.
Or you can put a little bit of brown sugar.
And star anise. Star anise. I know. In 1970, I had that in 1970. The big star anise.
Right.
Cook that in with them, and oh, you can't believe what the anise flavor to the sweet potatoes is.
Hmm.
Then you can do anything you want.
You
could streusel on the top. You could add dried fruit to it. It's good.
Well, I mentioned we could take some more callers, and suddenly
we got some. Let's have them.
We'll see how many we can do, starting in Savoy, line one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
If you really aren't sure about Brussels sprouts, you might try the way Julia Child cooked them. She would take the Brussels sprouts, cut them, you know, take the outer leaves off, cut them in half, and then steam them.
Steamed,
the microwave for just a little bit, not very long, just enough to get
about 4 minutes would be my guess.
Yeah, and then take them out and saute them in butter.
Oh, sauteed after they're cooked. Yeah, that's pretty fresh and pretty fast. Yeah,
and it's really the Brussels sprouts taste really good. Even my kids who don't like Brussels sprouts will at least try them.
David, you got a challenge.
Yep.
So okay.
You might try that.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thanks very much.
Great. Thank
See,
you.
That's all you got to do is say something goofy like Brussels sprouts, and suddenly people are going to want to tell you, no, dude, they're okay. Just do them like this. I might be. I'm willing. I'm a flexible guy. I'm willing to, you know, maybe give it a try. I hope my wife's not listening when she hears me saying that.
Oh, you're going to have Brussels sprouts for breakfast.
We could. We could. Line two is next in Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I just wanted to say, come to the farmer's market, buy fresh Brussels sprouts.
There you go.
And with a frost on them, and you'll love them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, all has to do with the quality of the crop you started with. So come to the market this weekend, David. Brussels sprouts that taste good.
Okay. Is this John?
Yes, it is.
Okay, we'll see what we can do about that. I might have to get somebody else to get up and go for me, though. That's kind of early. You wouldn't save some aside so that if I came at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, there would still be some.
I won't be there, but maybe I can get my wife to drop some off for you.
Oh, okay. That would be very good.
So you're going to be cornered here.
Oh, holy cow. All right. I may just be forced into doing something with Brussels sprouts. Thank you.
And all of a sudden you'll like them.
All right.
Bye-bye. It's possible.
You know, it comes from try it, you'll like it.
Well, I think we're about the point we're going to have to finish here. If people will send us, we did get some good recipes this morning, and we'll have them written up. And as I said before, we discovered that probably the easiest and most direct way to get it into your hands would be if you will send us a self-addressed stamped envelope, and we'll have them printed and we'll send them to you. And we are at 300 North Goodwin in Urbana, 61801 WILL Radio. We're in Campbell Hall. So if you just send it to us, we will do that. Next, I think Doyle said next month he will not be here. So look for us not in December, but
in January.
In January.
I'll be here in January.
All right. He's the man we like to call our chef in residence. Generally speaking, when he's not off gallivanting around the country someplace, he's
looking
here
for new recipes.
Looking for new recipes. Looking for, in search of Mr. Brussels sprout, the first Wednesday of the month, 10 o'clock. Thank you very much.
Yes.
This show is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, Homemade Pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Creative Crafts, Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Nackies, The Buzz Cafe, Prairie Fire Glass, and Any Frequency Music Store, all located on West Washington Street in Monticello. The broadcast is also made possible by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce. The Strawberry Fields Cafe, looking out on Springfield Avenue, features expanded seating for the deli and the coffee bar. Also, the broadcast is made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home at the corner of Elm and University in Champaign, locally owned and operated and serving families since 1925. Owens Funeral Home invites you to join them in supporting public radio. Coming up a little bit later today, as part of the afternoon magazine, we hear a conversation about the search for a bird that many people believed was extinct, the ivory-billed woodpecker. Cornell University ornithologist Tim Gallagher and his friend Bobby Harrison sighted the bird in February of 2004, and it was the first time since 1944 that two qualified observers positively identified the woodpecker in the United States. He's the author of The Bird on the Sub... Of a book on the subject, that bird. The title of the book is The Grail Bird, and he'll be talking with Celeste Quinn in the 1 o'clock hour of the afternoon magazine today. And, of course, the show itself gets underway at noon here on AM 580 with the usual mix of news and sports and weather and other things. And then you can hear that conversation about the ivory-billed woodpecker in the 1 o'clock hour. And, as always, your comments and questions would be welcome. Coming up in the next part of this show, we will be talking a little bit about the history of computing and of the computer. And our guest for the show will be a British computer scientist named Brian Randall. He's from the University of Newcastle upon Tyne, and he is something of an authority of the history of computing, particularly computing before 1950. Among other things, I'm sure we'll be talking a little bit about the Colossus, which was the first totally electronic computing device. It was developed during the Second World War to break German codes, and for a long, long time was shrouded in secrecy. Even up to the 70s, it was still largely secret. We'll talk a little bit about that, and perhaps also about the continued proliferation of computers in our lives, all that coming up in the next part of the show. So hope you can hang around. We'll have news and update on the markets. Stay tuned.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
It's a minute before 11 o'clock Central. Here's an update on the commodity prices on the Board of Trade Mercantile Exchange. December wheat is right now at $3.15 and three quarters a bushel.